You're listening to the John C. Scott Political Forum. This podcast is a Bustos Media production on The Voice. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
According to my calculations, this must be the place. Are you the proprietor?
Yeah, I run the place.
Are you perfection?
You just blasted a hole in my building. Hey, don't I know you? You're Marvin.
I need a new horizontal situation indicator for my 2023 Martian Maggot.
I've got one in stock.
And do you have an Illudium Q36 explosive space modulator?
No. That could destroy the Earth, right?
Correct. Mine does not seem to be working.
Well, that's a good thing. We don't need any more help with that. We'll fix your repair problem. Your Martian Maggot is ready for takeoff.
Do you accept uranium?
Yeah, it's as good as gold.
Finally, one good Earthling. In all the universe, there's no place like Perfection Auto Works. 323-8650 and perfectionautoworks.com.
Hi, I'm Joe D., president of the Democrats of Greater Tucson. With a warm invitation to join our group. We stand for the democratic values of diversity, inclusion, and empowerment. We offer timely weekly programs with speakers from politics and government. We offer a monthly happy hour. All this for only $20 a year. Just search the Democrats of Greater Tucson and join today.
If you want news and analysis of Arizona's increasingly unhinged state and local politics with a skeptical, fact-based, and progressive viewpoint, you should be reading blogforarizona.net. Blog for Arizona is a thriving institution in Arizona's progressive politics for almost 20 years now. Blog for Arizona has authors from across the state with extensive experience and insight into Arizona's political history and culture. Find us online at blogforarizona.net, as well as Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram.
Welcome to the John C. Scott Political Forum. John C. Scott is hosting one of the longest-running political talk shows in Arizona. This is the John C. Scott Political Forum on KVOI AM 1030, The Voice. And now, John C. Scott.
Thank you and good afternoon. Welcome to the John C. Scott Political Forum. From the Perfection Auto Works Studios, our broadcast originates from this location, and we are proud to announce our sponsors for 2023. First of all, this show could not operate without people who sponsor it, and we'd like for you to thank those sponsors if you appreciate the show. Want you to go to the people that make this show possible, like Home Gallery and the people at Perfection Auto Works, Ackerley Advertising, Blog for Arizona, Democrats of Greater Tucson, the Libertarian Party, Guinea's Cafe, and La Baguette Bakery, among the few that continue to advertise over so many years on the John C. Scott broadcast, which is now in its 34th year of continuous political talk in Southern Arizona. Today's guest, gun rights advocate Charles Heller, Michael Bryan, Democrat, who founded Blog for Arizona, and Joe D. of the Democrats of Greater Tucson. Here's Charles Heller, who's been a state-certified CCW instructor since 1994, and in 2005 was one of four co-founders of the Arizona Citizens Defense League, a primary self-defense civil rights lobbying organization in Arizona. Charles is host of the Swap Shop, Liberty Watch, and America Armed and Free, and America's Fabric, all heard Sundays on KVOI, this great radio station. Charles, welcome to the show. Thanks for being with us. Glad you could join us. Thank you.
My pleasure, John. I appreciate your reaching out and asking me to be on. And the intro almost wore you out.
Well, it did. I think, well, that's enough for me. I'm going to go take a nap, right? At my age, I'd like to nap a lot, so I probably what I should have done.
I'm not that far behind you in age. I'm 9 years behind you on the air. May 16th will be my 25th anniversary on the air.
Yeah, we started in 1989, you know, and of course it went from one radio station to another radio station and then to another radio station, back to the other radio station, and I have no idea how it continued as long as it has. I'm so pleased that it has done so. But it's been a journey of some sort.
Yeah.
An odyssey, we should say.
We've been on the same radio station at We've been on the same radio station at various times on and off.
We have. You were at the Jolt. I remember that, of course. And, all those stations.
I left there at a little higher velocity than you did.
One day I'll tell
that. You ran it for a while.
One of these days I'll tell that story I'm not afraid of a terrible lawsuit, but probably the truth should be known someday. But probably not today.
You'll be haunted by the ghost of Aldona.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. That's true. All right. Well, let me ask you. We've got more slaughter in California. These shootings, it's funny. It's not funny at all. It's terribly tragic that these events take place, and I talk to you about guns. There are some people that would believe you, because you are such a great gun advocate, rights person, that you don't give a damn about all these people that are slaughtered. You care only about your right to carry a gun, and that's the only... But the truth of the matter is, I know you, and you are not that person. You care about your friends, you care about your family, you care about society in general, and I want to say that those who would believe that about you are incredibly wrong, because you're a decent guy, an honest person. You have a different view than I do about guns, but let's talk about the continued absolutely mind-blowing numbers of people dead from handguns in America. What do we do? And I asked you this question over so many years, I ask you again.
Right. Well, first of all, John, the number is not mind-blowing. It's not. It's inflated by news reporting, which is to some extent disingenuous. There are approximately 11,000 murders in the United States with guns a year, which is tragic, but it is by no means the leader in the world in killings by firearm. We are a little bit below the middle as far as all the countries in the world in that. The vast majority of firearm deaths, about 64 or 63% are death by firearm, are actually suicide. So, and it's tragic, and I'm not an advocate for that, but I'm saying to you, you got to put it in proportion. The vast majority of death by gunfire in the United States is self-inflicted. And almost all of the rest of it is gang-related and confined to about 75 counties in the United States. And a lot of it is very, very tragically one ethnic minority upon the same ethnic minority. You don't hear about the mass casualty shootings on the south side of Chicago, but you do hear about them in places in California. That, too, is tragic, and frankly, it's racist on the part of the media not to report the true problems that do exist in it. And there are a number of things we can do to mitigate it and to address it, and hopefully someday to eradicate it.
We've got...
Do you want me to talk about that?
Yeah, I do. I just wanted to mention three people killed, at least four others injured. This is another shooting in Los Angeles. Within the last 24 hours, three people dead, two injured, taken to the hospital. That's on top of what happened in Monterey. That's what happened, obviously, in the other location throughout California. These are compounded by the tremendous amount of media coverage to them. But yes, please continue your thinking. I will not interrupt you again. Go ahead.
No, I want you to guide me on what you want me to talk about, because it's your program and I respect that. But going on, first of all, there's a recent Secret Service report on mass casualty shooters, and it very, very much clarifies a lot of the things that we suspect. About 60% of the people who do these things are known to law enforcement in one form or another, either through previous criminal acts or other encounters with law enforcement. I'll give you an example. The idiot, and we should never say their name, we both know the name, and most of the audience does too, of the mass casualty killer on January 11th in Tucson in 2011, January 8th, 2011. And we know that guy's name. He had a lot of contact with law enforcement. He was a known psychological problem. He got thrown out of Pima Community College, rightly, for his behavior. And the very day that he committed that heinous act, he had contact with the Pima County Sheriff's Department. I mean, we have a tendency to know who the likely people are to do this. Furthermore, there's a lot of clues. Most, not all, certainly, but most of the people who commit mass casualty acts like this leave some kind of a trail leading up to it. There are precursors of their violence. And part of the problem is we are so damn busy worrying about guns that we take some of the energy that could be used in people doing regulation instead of, and we should put them into enforcement. We should be monitoring social media to see people who have violent ideations, then go visit them and interview them. And then if there's a reason to, get a warrant and have the, and use the existing laws. We don't need any more laws at all. Use the existing laws if those people are a danger to themselves or others to incarcerate them for a psychological evaluation. And if they're unqualified to be out amongst us, then incarcerate them and treat them.
Charles, if there's a reason to believe that we have more killings like this, mass shooters, because we have more guns, would it not make sense to say we'd have less mass killings if we had less firearms? And I'm speaking directly as to assault weapons, weapons of war, weapons used by the military that are now in civilian hands that have caused so much damage and so much death in this country over the last 10 or 15 years. So less guns, less killings.
It would make sense if the base premise was accurate, but it's not. First of all, there is no statistic at all to show that the number of guns is related to the number of crimes. However, there is a statistic that shows that the number of guns in civilian hands has increased safety. There are now more than 22 million concealed weapons permits in the United States, and there's 25 states that don't even require a permit to carry a gun. And what you're seeing is a rise in the number of defensive shootings. It used to be that we'd have about 1,200 killings, justifiable killings, in the United States a year. That number's gone over 2,000 in the last few years. We're talking about justifiable homicides, not about murder. We're talking about people using firearms in self-defense. That's the number that's going up with civilian gun pop, with civilian gun ownership. Also, the other thing that's gone up, and people don't talk about it at all, is the amount of training that's going on. People who own guns are, by and large, responsible. Yes, there are some who are not. But there are more and more and more people seeking out professional training. They don't have to be a gunslinger. They don't have to be this, you know, this gun expert. They just have to know how to be competent and know what the laws are. And people are seeking that training these days throughout the whole country.
We're talking to Charles Hallow, gun rights advocate. Charles, I want to talk about assault weapons and what has happened in the state of Illinois to ban some of these weapons and where that is going. But let me take a quick break and we'll come back and talk about guns,
okay,
the tragedies of the mass killings, and where we are in the United States with what is an American tragedy. We'll be back in just a moment with Charles Heller right after these messages from the Perfection Auto Works Studios. This is the John C. Scott Political Forum. Now, two great furniture stores have become one. Homestyle Galleries, formerly located at 1010 South Wilmot and 2950 West Ina Road, have moved the Wilmot store to the West Ina Road location, making the Ina Road location one of the largest and most complete pre-owned and new quality furniture and home accessory store in Arizona. Homestyle Gallery saves you thousands of dollars on Southern Arizona's finest home furnishings. Now you can turn once-loved furnishings into cash. Visit this new Homestyle Gallery store at 2950 West Ina Road. They're open 7 days a week. There's never been a home furnishings inventory like this 15,000 square feet superstore. You must visit Homestyle Gallery's one-stop location for Southern Arizona's largest savings on quality furniture. Together, they've brought a bit of France to the heart of Tucson. Guigny's French Cafe and La Baguette Bakery at Prince and Campbell have become a gathering place for Tucsonans who love great bread and wonderful food. The bread and the pastries of La Baguette Bakery have become a Tucson favorite, and Guigny's French Cafe offers casual atmosphere, delightful French cuisine, and moderate prices. Dine in or dine out, Guigny's is just perfect for breakfast and lunch, offering specialty coffees, lattes, French wines, cocktails, imported beer, and a touch of France. Guigny's French Cafe and La Baguette Bakery in the Safeway Center at Prince and Campbell have now become Tucson's destination to dine in or to take out.
What organizations sponsor the news you see on TV? Do you think these sponsorships affect the news reports about their products? Do these same organizations sponsor politicians? If you recognize that our current leaders represent their own interests far more than yours, if you question the political theater you're fed every day, and if you question the approved narrative, become engaged for freedom in the Pima County Libertarian Party, no matter your political party preference.
Check out PimaLP.org or find us on Facebook. Paid for by the Pima County Libertarian Party.
From the Professional Auto Works Studios, this is the John C. Scott Political Forum. My guest, gun rights advocate Charles Heller. Charles, let's talk about assault weapons. Bannon, Illinois, other states may soon follow suit. The idea that you can shoot 80 bullets in 60 seconds or maybe more in less time makes it very possible that a mass shooter can kill a great many people in a very brief period of time. It is a very dangerous weapon. Many believe a weapon of war that ought to be only held within the armed forces of a country rather than the civilians of a country. What say you?
Well, John, that's exactly what our country was built to defeat, that idea. The idea was that the citizens should be as well-armed as the military, is what this country was built on and how the country was formed. So if you want to change that, you've got to change the Constitution. But I don't know what you mean by assault weapons. I truly don't. What's the definition?
Well, you tell me what your definition is. It certainly would not be mine.
My definition is that any weapon used in an assault against another human being is by definition an assault.
Well, all right, let's take an AK-47 just to help you out there.
Okay. All right. Well, the AK pattern rifle, it is one of the original assault rifles. The term assault weapon is a manufactured construct deliberately to confuse people. An assault weapon is anything used in an assault. That's easy. An AK pattern rifle is not available generally to the civilian public in its fully automatic form. The semi-automatic form is certainly available from many, many, many different manufacturers, as is the AR-15 pattern rifle, which is America's rifle today. It is the AR-15 today is the lever-action cowboy rifle of today. Okay, if you want to put it in those terms, in its day, the lever-action carbine and the lever-action rifle were basically the rifle that won the West. It was not the Colt single action. And the AR-15 pattern rifle is America's rifle on par with the lever-action carbine of its day. So there are over 40 million of them out there. They've been available to the civilian market since 1959 without causing a problem. And so it has only been since it's because the rifle is so popular they happen to be being used. Let me give you an analogy. If I were in the studio, I could bring an AR-15 cartridge and I'd set it there, and it's a 223, it's 0.223 of an inch wide, and I don't know how long the bullet is, but it weighs about 55 grains or about a fifth of an ounce or so. All right? If you took a shotgun cartridge in 12 gauge that the FBI uses, the number 4 buck, it's called the FBI load, has 27 pellets in it of approximately the same size. One pull of the trigger gets you one round with an AR. It gets you 27 flying projectiles with a shotgun. If, let's say, we were magically able to wave a wand, all right, the Perfection Auto Works, not that he would do it, but I'm saying the magic wand created by him, and all AR-15 pattern rifles and pistols disappeared. Wouldn't change a thing about mass casualty shootings, John. If people use shotguns, more people would die. I mean, the focusing on the gun is one of the worst distractions an intelligent person could possibly make. The problem isn't the gun, John. The problem is the behavior. Some people have come up with a stupid ideation that it's okay to hurt other people. We've got to turn people away from that, and we got to find ways to look at people who may be planning that and dissuade them from doing it one way or another. Either ballistically, God forbid, either if it's necessary to do ballistically, or better off if we concentrate on the people who are the problem rather than the instrument they're using to do it.
Seems like these particular weapons we're talking about, the AK-47, is still a weapon of choice for mass killers, is it not?
No, almost all mass casualty shootings are done with handguns, John. It's a fallacy. rifles altogether, rifles are used in less than 3% of the murders in the country. And the fact that they have been used in some rather glaringly gruesome ones is true, but it's a very, very, very small percentage of the mass casualty shootings done. The vast majority of mass casualty shootings are done with handguns.
Well, those handguns are automatic. They fire a great many bullets in a very short period of time. And it varies. Well, they're not. We're not talking about a six shooter where you put six bullets in and then shoot six, and then you put six more bullets in. And we're not talking about
John,
that kind.
You could shoot a six. You could shoot a modern revolver at about the same speed as a semi-automatic. You understand?
Couldn't reload it at the same amount of time, though.
Yeah, you could. Oh. It's called a speed loader, John. It's a round device with a latch on it, and you can load a revolver almost as fast, not exactly as fast, but almost as fast as a semi-auto. And on top of that, you can pull the trigger just as fast with a revolver.
All right, very quickly. I'm out of time. I have a 1 minute time summary for what you think ought to be done with these mass killings that are so terrible in America. Please, give me 60 seconds.
One, the DIE initiative, Don't Inspire Evil. Get the media to agree not to glorify the names or pictures of the people who commit the acts. One of the main motivators in this stuff is these people don't feel like they matter, and the only way they can matter is to go out in a blaze of glory and have their name known forever to the media and to the public.
30 seconds.
Stop it. The other thing we can do is a program called FASTER, Faculty and Staff Training for Emergency Response. Have people who are trained in stopping the threat and, most importantly, the medical procedures necessary to save lives. Most people who die from gunfire don't die from the trauma. They die from the bleeding out.
Charles, thank you.
If you can stop the bleed and you can get them to the ER with a pulse, they have a 90% chance of survival.
Charles,
those two things we could do would go a long way to solve this.
Charles Heller is host of Swap Shop, Liberty Watch, America Armed and Free, and America's Fabric, all heard Sundays on KVOI. Charles Heller, thank you so much for being with us. We appreciate it so much. Thank you. From the Perfection.org studios, this is the John C. Scott Political Forum.
According to my calculations, this must be the place. Are you the proprietor?
Yeah, I run the place.
Are you Perfection?
You just blasted a hole in my building. Hey, don't I know you? You're Marvin.
I need a new horizontal situation indicator for my 2023 Martian Maggot.
Let's see. Yeah, I've got one in stock.
And do you have an Illudium Q36 explosive space modulator?
No. That could destroy the Earth, right?
Correct. Mine does not seem to be working.
Well, that's a good thing. We don't need any more help with that. We'll fix your repair problem. Your Martian Maggot is ready for takeoff.
Do you accept uranium?
Yeah, it's as good as gold.
Finally, one good Earthling. In all the universe, there's no place like Perfection Auto Works. 323-8650 and PerfectionAutoWorks.com.
From the Perfection Auto Works studios, this is the John C. Scott Political Forum. Mark O'Brien is with us now, former city prosecutor. He's the founder of Blog for Arizona, the progressive blog that the Washington Post calls the very best blog in the state of Arizona. Michael, welcome to the show. Thanks for being with us.
Hi, John. A pleasure to be here.
Every time I talk guns and talk about the slaughter in America, it is a slaughter. I feel like apparently there's just a price for freedom. It's the collateral damage, and we can't do anything about it. If we want to allow people to have guns, we're going to have to allow people who are crazy to continue to kill. And there's really not a hell of a lot we can do about it. I have not heard any solution that is simply going to literally curtail this unless we start finding out who has guns and who should not have them and do something about that, as well as banning guns that do a terrible amount of damage in a very short period of time. But your comments are welcome here. That's why I called you. Thank you.
Absolutely. So I listened to your interview with your prior guest there, and I found a couple of things of interesting note. One, his solution is to do nothing to prevent gun violence. So just let's respond to it better, save more lives, you know, don't give people publicity, you know, and hope it goes away. It's absurd, and most Americans recognize that those solutions aren't solutions. We have to do something to prevent gun violence. In a lot of what he said, he was just simply lying with statistics. And there's a reason why the gun lobby and gun rights advocates are able to get away with that. That's because we, as a nation, as a federal government, are prevented from studying the issue of gun violence as a public health crisis. You know, we can't allocate the money and resources that are needed to understand the problem well enough and systemically enough to be able to get at the root causes and thus address it and prevent it. And there's a reason for that, because the gun lobby doesn't want us to, and they have lobbied heavily to prevent us from taking a rational public study approach to it and address the real health crisis that is guns in our society. One place where me and your previous guest agree is that gun violence in the United States is not fully explained just by the number of guns. If you look globally, you can see that there is absolutely a very real correlation between the number of guns and the number of gun deaths in a society. I mean, the more guns you have, the more violence you have as a result of guns. It's as simple as that. But, I mean, if you just look at that as a single correlational correspondence, it doesn't explain why the United States is such an extraordinarily violent place when it comes to guns. In order to get that, you have to look at the history and sociology and ideology underlying the founding and history of this nation.
Well, let's talk about that. Where would you say that began, and why is it continuing?
Well, right at the very beginning. I mean, any objective observer of our country and our history will admit that there's a tight ideological and sociological nexus between whiteness, Christian religion, racial and sexual bigotry, and the license to use violence to enforce those views and the supremacy of that system over all others. I mean, that's how our nation was founded. That's how our history is developed. And it is only now that our democracy is starting to challenge that notion of white supremacy, challenge those notions of bigotry, challenge that notion of white supremacy, that you see systems of white hatred, white bigotry, and white control pushing back. And I see that happening in the current Supreme Court quite strongly.
Well, why don't you take a look at all these particular mass shootings, and we keep seemingly having them as a current menu every single week. And somewhere in America, you can bet that this next week there'll be another mass shooting, maybe four or five people, maybe 20 or 25. The simple truth of the matter is we've come to accept this as another headline. We have come a long way from accepting it as something we must change and do it now, because our families could be in the Walmart. Our families could be somewhere near where a mass shooter decides to take out the innocent and indiscriminately kill anybody that happens to be within the range of his fire. And that could be my family, could be my daughter, could be my grandchildren, ages 4 and 2, I might add. They could be slaughtered. We know about children dying in Tucson, Arizona, obviously, from the January shooting. But, you know, the idea that we simply cannot do anything about it, because it would jeopardize a constitutional right, as believed by many, that to bear arms. And that you are safer the more guns you have. And we are a safer society because there are more guns in the hands of those who would use them to defend themselves. Somewhere along the way, we are off track. Somewhere we've lost our way, and we must find it back before our families are the next victims.
Yeah. I don't know that I totally agree with all of that, because I don't think there's anything new about mass violence in the United States as a tool of political control or coercion or political terrorism. I think it's quite common through our history. And there's a point to it. When we can't be safe in our schools, our public gatherings, our houses of worship, places of refuge for our minority populations, both sexual minorities, racial minorities, we're being intentionally terrified into not participating fully in our nation's political life. That kind of political terrorism of armed bigotry, it's not a side effect of lax gun laws. It's the purpose of lax gun laws, in my view. So we have tried in many ways to use our democratic process to try and limit that with anti-discrimination laws, with gun control legislation. But increasingly, as we make gains in those areas, we see the reactive population here in the United States, the conservative backlash, if you will, expressed currently through the Supreme Court most strongly in protecting and building what I like to call a constitutional right to armed white bigotry. Basically, it's the nexus of precluding any regulation of firearms, even by the states and localities, that you see through Heller and Bruin cases that have basically restricted our state and local governments from being able to do gun control and the federal government, and then extending the boundaries of protecting religiously based bigotries from legal sanction. I mean, you see that thrust, too, through like cases like Klein, 303 Creative, the Masterpiece Cake Shop, that essentially protect the right for people to hide behind their religion with their bigotry and hate whomever they wish, and thereby terrorize those people with the constitutional right to bear arms that they have. I have no doubt that what this is we're seeing the entrenchment of the right to constitutionally arm yourself, be bigoted against certain groups, and to terrorize those groups by arming yourself, as being entrenched into our politics and removed from the democratic process by the Supreme Court. And I think that's the real danger we need to be talking about is why is the Supreme Court trying to place these topics outside of the control of democratic governance? And the answer is that democratic governance is too responsive to the American people. The American people want a solution to this. They want a solution to mass gun violence. They want a stop to the political terrorism that it involves, and the Supreme Court doesn't want to let them have it.
Michael Brown is my guest. He's a former city prosecutor. It seems to me that we know so much about these mass shooters that was obvious to a great many people that there was a clear and present danger from them. The 6-year-old that took the gun to class, we all knew that one, that was a problem with this kid, and a lot of people knew that he possibly had a gun, and they didn't do a damn thing about it. The same thing applies to a great many other of these mass shooters. He was troubled. We knew what kind of problem he had. We knew he was a hater. We knew he was upset. We knew that there was something wrong with him or her or whatever. Mm-hmm. Why can't we do something about these people who literally light up like neon when it comes to taking a look at what they might possibly do when it is very obvious of what they will do, for God's sake?
Yeah, I think it is a mistake to put too much emphasis on trying to prevent a particular individual who's been radicalized by ideology or bigotry to look at that person and say, oh, we need to preclude that person from having guns. No, what we need to do is reduce guns across the board, reduce the availability of guns to classes of people. And that has always been in our tradition. Unfortunately, in the past, it's been, racial minorities that generally have had restrictions of guns placed upon them by national government. I mean, you see that, any time there's any kind of move toward gun control, it's generally inspired by some sort of white anxiety. When the Black Panthers in the 1970s, were organizing armed militias and street protests with open carry, you saw a movement of white America to go ahead and start supporting more gun control regulation. You saw with the assault weapons ban when police officers, white police officers mainly, were saying, oh, look, we're outgunned by these street gangs, these criminal street gangs, read minority people, on the street. We need to control these assault weapons. And that's where the assault weapons ban impetus came from. Was being outgunned. So I think the idea that we just need to do more gun control for individuals is mistaken. I think what we need to do is to study the problem in a more systemic way so we can see what the public health risks are, see what the risk factors are population-wide, and take a look at how we actually allocate gun rights in this country so that the people who are most likely to commit stochastic terrorism, mass shootings, that sort of thing, just simply don't have access to guns. And it's not an individual case-by-case basis. It's a class-based, you know, a classification-based restriction from firearms. And I think that will reduce gun violence overall.
Daniel's got a question for you. Daniel, welcome to the John C. Scott Political Forum. Thanks for your call. Go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. I've got quite a few employees who have talked this over, and I listened to them. After we take all these people's guns away and the right to protect their wives and family, how are we going to protect the people out on the streets from crazies like in Wisconsin who take their trucks and heavy cars and run down hundreds of people in a parade or anywhere on the streets? How are we going to stop all these people on the street killers?
All right, Daniel, thanks for your question. Go ahead, Michael.
Yeah, it's a really good question. It's a difficult one. I think one of the reasons why it's difficult to grapple with that from a policy standpoint is because we're not studying the issue sufficiently. But I certainly sympathize with the idea that you should have the right to have a gun to protect yourself and your family. I have one. So it's not that I'm against gun ownership. It's that we need to look more closely at the public health risks of using that gun against strangers, against family members, you know, in ways that are aggressive and terroristic. You know, I'll give you an example. Restricting gun access for people who are convicted of domestic violence is known to be a huge risk factor for basically, you know, killing that partner. And the Supreme Court recently attacked that, saying that domestic violence has historically not been a basis for removing people's gun rights. So they're even trying to get into the areas where we know we can be effective in restricting a class of persons from having access to firearms and preventing violence. And it just goes to show that, you know, when we try to make progress toward reducing gun violence in this country, not by just taking away everybody's guns, nobody's going to ever do that in the United States, but by restricting certain class of people based on their behavior and their history from having guns because they've proven to have a propensity of violence or a desire to commit violence, even that is being removed from democratic control by the Supreme Court.
Michael, thanks so much for your observations and participating in our discussion today. I think it's so important that we talk about this. To do nothing would be the worst thing that we could do about this terrible, terrible slaughter. Thank you so much. Great. Appreciate you being on the show, and have a great weekend. Thanks for giving
us
part
me.
Of yours. Thanks.
You betcha. Bye-bye.
Michael Bryan, former city prosecutor. I want to thank Charles Heller, KVOI radio personality, and gun rights defender. Coming up next, Joe D. of the Democrats of Greater Tucson, a great new month of broadcast programs that you can be a part of. That's right after these messages from the Perfection Auto Works Studios. This is the John C. Scott Political Forum. Thanks for listening today. Now, two great furniture stores have become one. Homestyle Galleries, formerly located at 1010 South Wilmot and 2950 West Ina Road, have moved the Wilmot store to the West Ina Road location, making the Ina Road location one of the largest and most complete pre-owned and new quality furniture and home accessory store in Arizona. Homestyle Gallery saves you thousands of dollars on Southern Arizona's finest home furnishings. Now you can turn once-loved furnishings into cash. Visit this new Homestyle Gallery store at 2950 West Ina Road. They're open 7 days a week. There's never been a home furnishings inventory like this 15,000 square feet superstore. You must visit Homestyle Gallery's one-stop location for Southern Arizona's largest savings on quality furniture.
What organizations sponsor the news you see on TV? Do you think these sponsorships affect the news reports about their products? Do these same organizations sponsor politicians? If you recognize that our current leaders represent their own interests far more than yours, if you question the political theater you're fed every day, and if you question the approved narrative, become engaged for freedom in the Pima County Libertarian Party, no matter your political party preference.
Check out PimaLP.org or find us on Facebook. Paid for by the Pima County Libertarian Party.
Radio advertising busts through clutter and reaches your customers with immediacy.
Contact Ackerly Advertising.
Tell a creative story with intimacy and emotion to sell your products and services directly to your customer.
Contact Ackerly Advertising.
Your radio commercial puts you front and center in the listener's attention span.
Contact Ackerly Advertising.
Ackerly Advertising has over 5 decades of radio advertising experience. Stir emotion, create demand, and grow your business with radio.
Contact Ackerly Advertising.
From the Perfection.org studios, this is the John C. Scott Political Forum. With us now is Joe D. of the Democrats of Greater Tucson. Joe, welcome to our show. Thanks so much. I want to compliment you and as well as the others that have participated over the last year in the Democrats of Greater Tucson radio show. This organization is one of the fastest growing Democratic organizations in the state of Arizona, and it's because of your hard work. If you would just start off by saying what you think is attributed to this incredible growth, I'd love to hear it. Other people would like to hear it as well, but it has been remarkable what you've accomplished. So how did you do this?
Well, John, thank you so much. We basically had to go to the Zoom format for our meetings, and it was kind of begrudgingly, and I really think that was the catalyst that got us really communicating better with our Democrat audience. We've gone from the Monday meeting that we're still going to have, and then we also now have a salon concept where we talk more about an issue and bring in 2 or 3 people who can amplify that issue. So lots of good stuff. And if I might, today was our state Democratic Party convention, and we had it by Zoom, and we had 2 very good candidates. We had Stephen Gallardo and Yolanda Bejarano, and both of them pledged to us as Democrats of Greater Tucson. We had a forum with both of them, and they pledged they would work together no matter who won the election. And we're seeing that the Democratic Party at the state level is united, it's enthused, it's building on successes, and we're going to have a great general election coming up.
That's amazing, because I think it takes that kind of groundwork, that kind of literally in the trenches effort that makes the Democratic Party successful when it is successful, is people who are willing to do the work door to door, make the phone calls, keep in contact with everybody that you can, and tell the story to as many people as you can, and that's what you do. We're getting a new year. The city council races are this year. Important races indeed. But let's talk about what 2023 has in store for those who follow the Democrats of Greater Tucson. I would like to be a part of it, if you will, please.
Well, great. We have a nominal registration fee of $20, and we encourage everyone within listening to participate by going to the Democrats of Greater Tucson as a search, or the democratsofgreatertucson.org. And they can go ahead on Act Blue and register and pay their $20. We'll definitely have all candidates for city elections coming to our Monday meeting and getting a chance to use that great forum to get their message across. We also are really excited about Ruben Gallego announcing formally his run for the Senate. Things are coming together so well for that race, and there's so many Democrats and Arizonans that really want to see a fresh face in that senator seat.
They do indeed. We're almost out of time here. Joe D., I apologize for the brevity of this. We're going to have a little more lengthy discussion next week. But you are doing an amazing job of not only following in the footsteps of your predecessor to keep the Democrats of Greater Tucson relevant, but to keep it a viable forum for political participation unlike anything else in Tucson, Arizona. It is an amazing success story, thanks to you, and I appreciate you being on the air to share some of your stories about what is happening and how the Democrats of Greater Tucson are keeping people aware of the Democratic Party effort. So have a great weekend. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you. Thank you.
You bet, Joe D., president of the Democrats Greater Tucson. From the Perfection Auto Works studios, this has been the John C. Scott Political Forum. Thank you so much for listening. Have a great weekend, everybody. And thanks for listening to our show. Sponsors, please tell them you support our show and support them as well.
Hi, I'm Joe D., president of the Democrats of Greater Tucson, with a warm invitation to join our group. We stand for the democratic values of diversity, inclusion, and empowerment. We offer timely weekly programs with speakers from politics and government. We offer a monthly happy hour. All this for only $20 a year. Just search the Democrats of Greater Tucson and join today.
All right, Mr. Taggett, we'll get right on that transmission. Fool. Here, give Mongo the keys and have him park that piece of junk in the back lot.
Mongo like candy.
Hey, boss man, you want me to get on that car?
No, Lily Von Stuck's coming over to sing for us.
Hey, she's here.
Hey,
leave here for 10 minutes and come back and you're all dancing around like a bunch of Kansas City maggots.
You guys give Rock Ridge Auto Repair a bad name.
Give us another chance.
Doggone it, I've had enough. I'm taking my car to Perfection Auto Works.
Dang, lost another customer.
A man who drink like that, he gonna die.
At Perfection Auto Works, we'll blaze a trail to get you back in the saddle again. Perfection Auto Works will make your car run at full horsepower. Call 323-8650 and Perfection Auto Works.